Let's get our view from the middle. Find his work for USA Today Sports online, usatoday.com. Pick up a copy at your local newsstand. Follow what he's up to on Twitter. The handle is at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are you today?
Life is good. How are you?
Great. The Football Bowl Association Executive Committee held their annual meeting, and apparently they realized that not even major college football fans are passionate about all the bowl games. I guess the theme, you got hats making bowls great again. So
yeah, it was a bit of a joke.
I know. It was just, I thought it was pretty funny.
The heyday of the bowls is never coming back for two reasons. One, we're in a new era with the playoff. And two, the heyday of the bowls was about 15 bowls, not 40. But that doesn't mean that they're not all entertaining in their own way. And so it's kind of an interesting thing. It's more like the past is never coming back. How do you make the current great is sort of how do you embrace the current? And that's sort of where they are. So Wrightwater is the executive director of the FBA. Had some hats made up, and I realized what I'm about to say on the air in Eugene, Oregon. They were red hats, very basic, in a very basic font, in all caps. They said, "Make bowls great again." And yes, they looked exactly like those Trump hats, right down to those little odd red cording, the cord that runs along the bottom of the between the brim and the and the rest of the cap.
It was perfect. Are you kidding me? When you think about the reputation for being kind of stick in the muds and stodgy to come up with something like that, I thought.
Yeah, but we were in a pretty polarized time. I'm not sure making a joke like that works for, half the country. And so I thought it was daring and audacious, which I guess is a little bit redundant, but. It's just Bright Waters' way of having a little bit of fun, and I thought it worked pretty well.
Well, as you well know, most people would look at me as kind of a hippie commie pinko, and I thought it was funny. So there you go.
Well, so if you're representative of it, then he did okay.
Nick Saban said when the playoff system kicked in that it would impact the bowls. The quote from Greg Sankey kind of acknowledged, but he said the playoff is not the main reason. What did he say basically about what else is detracting from the bowls that don't, the bowls that don't impact who's going to get the national title?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the proliferation of the bowls. I mean, 20 years ago, there were 20 bowls.
Whoa.
Which seemed like a lot because 30 years ago, there were 15. Well, there were 20 bowls. Well, last year, there were 40 in 2016.
Right.
So now, the Holiday Bowl, which also had run the Poinsettia Bowl for a dozen years, has decided to shutter the Poinsettia Bowl, and so they're down to 39 going into next year. What that means is 78 teams will go to bowls next year. 78. And none of this this doesn't count the national championship game because obviously those feed out of two of the bowls. So 78 teams will go to bowls next year, and which means that anybody who's 6-6 goes to bowl games. Well, that's the biggest thing that's buffeting the bowls is the sheer number of them and the fact that if you have a 500 season, and by the way, when there aren't enough 6-6 teams, which has happened in both of the last 2 years, you can get a 5-7 team in there. That sort of reduces sort of the it makes the bowls commonplace, as Scott Strickland, the new Florida AD, told me. He said, "I don't want to use the phrase watered down," so of course he used it. but they're commonplace. Well, I think that's the biggest thing. The other factors that sort of reduce the, other than just sort of the playoff narrative, which consumes, college football coverage, and I think a lot of college football fans too. The other factor beyond that is just sort of the generally changing consumer habits that we're seeing that attendance is down, TV ratings are down for the bowls, but they're down all across college football, but they're down across all of sports. And that's attributable to our changing habits of how we we can get better experiences at home sometimes, so we don't go to games, and B, we now maybe don't watch them on TV, we watch them in some other format because we do other stuff and we're used to sort of having things on demand. And those are symptoms of problems that are happening throughout sport. So I'm not sure that's a bowl specific issue.
No, that's a good point. As we continue with George Schroeder, USA Today, check out his piece, basically the state of the bowl games, though he used the word homogenous, and I did have to Google that. You quoted Wright Waters, the director of the FBA. He cited Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey passed on their bowls, and obviously it didn't impact their status as a draftee. He also brought up a good point. He was like, is it because they're high profile that we learned they missed the bowl games, and any concern this would become a trend?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I think that is a concern from the bowl's perspective. I don't know if it should be a concern. I do think this. I think it is going to become a trend, and here's why. Now, let me explain it. Here's why it's going to become a trend. Because Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey skipped the bowls and went fourth and eighth overall in the draft. Yep. That's why. Had they gone in the second round as surefire first rounders because of that, or something like that, or 18th and 22nd, that might not become a trend. But it's going to become a trend, a very, very, I think, limited trend. You know, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 players, maybe? I mean, I don't really know for sure, but potentially a year, which seems like an awful lot. But here's why. It's going to be limited to surefire first rounders, although the Baylor running back, Shaq Linwood, also did it, and he did not get drafted. He had some other issues, but he'll be a cautionary tale for the guys who aren't first-rounders. You'll be a surefire first-rounder playing in what's perceived to be a minor bowl. Now, that makes the bowl people upset because I just said minor bowl, but yep. Obviously we all know there are some that are closer to the bottom of the food chain than the top. The other piece of that I didn't get into in the story, because it wasn't only about that particular issue, it was about the overall bowl thing, is, you know, you've had a couple of high-profile injuries in bowl games here recently that have impacted guys' draft status. Now, I'll say this, when that happens, it could have happened in the last game of the regular season, too. Football, you get injured. But you're going to have people taking both the experiences of Fournette and McCaffrey and how some of these guys slid in the draft after getting injured who look like first-rounders, and I do think you're going to see a trend, but it'll be limited, I think, in those two ways, minor bowls and surefire first-rounders.
All right. You tweeted out an article by one of your colleagues, Steve Berkowitz, about Nick Saban gets this contract extension, a raise. I mean, he's making some really serious coin. And the paying college players issue is kind of deep, multi-pronged. We could probably do a show about that. But when something like this happens and we see that kind of cash available for coaches, does that kind of fan the flames for those who are kind of on that pay them side of the argument?
Oh, I guess every time that happens, but you know, that it's not a new thing. And right now the pay for play issue is kind of, you know, percolating on the back burner. I think I don't know if that's a mixed metaphor, probably, but it's just sort of sitting out there. Now there's a couple of obviously court cases winding their way through the system, and maybe it'll pop back up at that point. But I think we're sort of used to the fact that these college football coaches, you know, at the highest parts of college football, make a ton of money. I think we've kind of grown used to that at this point. I don't know that this, you know, does it give more fuel to the fire? Yeah, but what's the difference between, you know, what he makes today versus what he made yesterday? Right. He was making a ton yesterday. What's the difference between $7 million and $5 million, or even $3.5 million? I don't know why that changes has to change the narrative. If you're going to believe what you believe, depending on which side of the argument you're on.
I hope someday to find out the difference between making $3.5 million and $5 million a year.
yeah, I guess. I mean, I suppose that's something different, right?
Yeah.
At this point, you'd like to find out the difference between making $3.5 million and the $1 million that you make.
Right, that'd right, be great. Right. When we're talking coin, obviously, it's radio host and market 150. Last week, we talked about.
So it's $1 million.
Yeah, you're giving away my salary. Or what's the joke? Don't let my salary leak out. Hey, your salary couldn't drip out. Anyway, we talked about how many who follow and do what you do really, really focus on the college game don't necessarily turn into draft nicks and recruit and you know, mock drafts and all that. But anyway, the draft did happen. The Texans traded up to get Deshaun Watson. You've seen him up close and personal multiple times, and I know it's a total crapshoot, but how do you think his game transfers to Sundays?
Well, I think it transfers pretty well, but, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not an expert about pro football. Maybe not about college football either, as far as that goes, but I don't even claim to be about pro football. And, you know, we have seen in drafting, we've seen college quarterbacks that we all thought were fantastic not be able to play in the pros because they didn't have the measurables. And on the other hand, we've seen the pros draft these guys with these fantastic measurables who can't play and can't play dead in the pros. And those of us who watch college football could have told you that. And I'm going to give you an example, which is not answering your question, but recall, Oregon fans and Oregon State fans, recall Jake Locker from Washington.
Yep.
Who was not a great quarterback at the college level, but had these physical measurements that the scouts just drooled over. And so they all thought that, hey, we'll coach him up better than he's ever been coached up, and he's going to be a really good NFL quarterback. Turned out he wasn't. Turned out he wasn't. There are lots of guys like that, just as many as there are of the guys who are really good college quarterbacks who maybe don't quite have the arm that it takes to succeed at the pro game, and then thus they can't do it. I don't think Deshaun Watson fits either one of those categories. I mean, I think he's got the big-time arm that they need, and I think the questions about him was that reason he slid all the way to 12, which isn't a bad place to be, was because, you know, he was in a spread offense, and the NFL still doesn't like that. They're adjusting to it because guess what? 95% of the quarterbacks that they're going to be drafting from here on out, it feels like they're going to be in spread offenses from the time they're in, you know, mighty league,
right,
all the way up. They're adjusting. I think he's going to be really good. But, I mean, it is a total crapshoot. You're right. I will say this. I think the Bears at number two, especially with what they did to get to number two, and then taking North Carolina quarterback Mitch Trubisky, I think that's like, to me, maybe he's going to be really good, but you could be talking about Jake Locker. Lots of measurables, but a complete unknown in terms of what he's going to do. Maybe he'll be really good. Maybe he's just now starting, but, you know, he only started last season.
Right. No.
So maybe he's just started getting better. But that to me is I think Deshaun Watson's potentially a sure thing. I think Texans did a great job, but of getting him, and great for them that he was there at 12. But, you know, again, now I'm pretending like I'm a draft expert, but Mitch Trubisky raised some eyebrows, I think, around college football and maybe even around the NFL.
Well, guys who supposedly do this for a living and know their stuff have taken Ryan Leaf and Tony Mandarich and Rick Meyer second. So why can't you or I take a shot in the dark and see if we're
right? Should. Yeah, I think we should. So we did.
All right, let's wrap with the NBA playoffs. It's a question I've asked since the second round of the playoffs began. So the deal is, if I provide the cash, you make the bet and keep the profits. The wager is the Cavs and Warriors play in the finals, or other, anything else, A or B?
I'll take the Cavs and the Warriors. Look, I know the Cavs, you know, to me, they know when to turn it on for the playoffs. We started to see that. And the Warriors, I think, are the best team. So I think coming out of those two conferences, that's the way I'd go. I mean, I'd go with them.
All right. So, well, actually, our poll is about 78% in favor of a three-peat. It'd be the third time they play.
The problem with other, and I get that means you get the field, which makes it a whole lot easier, and you have two sides. And so if you get Cavs and somebody else or Warriors and somebody else, you've won. But the problem is, who's it going to be?
Right, that's the problem. You could say other, but you really need to be specific if you're gonna bet on it.
Who's gonna beat either one of those teams in a 7-game series? If you extend them to 7, who's getting them? I don't know who it is.
My answer is I asked the question expecting it to be overwhelming for the reigning champs, and guess what? It was.
Yep.
All right. Good stuff as always, George. Enjoy the rest of your week. You can keep up with him, usatoday.com, at George Schroeder on Twitter. Always our pleasure, sir. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
All right. Take it easy.